Welcome to the Pint and Click podcast. I'm Dave. I'm here with Tony and Jamie. And usually we talk about all sorts of things, movies and music and books. But today we're going to talk about comics and comic movies and DC comics and movies specifically. It's a DC themed day. And I'm going to go first. I'm going to talk about my favorite graphic novel, DC, Marvel, or otherwise. It is called Kingdom Come. It is by Mark Waid and is drawn by Alex Ross, probably my favorite writer and probably my favorite artist. So this book has a premise where it begins 10 years after Superman kind of gave up. He was doing his thing. We all know Superman, you know, he's pulling cats out of trees and stopping bank robberies, that kind of stuff. And there is an incident where he decides, that's it, no more, I'm done. You guys are on your own. He retreats to a farm to live out his life, presumably. And the book starts with Wonder Woman kind of coming back and saying, the world needs Superman. And him saying, no, the world doesn't need me. An exploration of that. And it's kind of told from a very strange point of view. It's told from the point of view of this pastor who kind of jumps between scenes, jumps around in time. So the story is linear, but it's not sequential. He'll jump from this moment in this town to a moment days or hours later in another part of the world. He just jumps and jumps and jumps. So I think it is a fascinating Superman story. And it is my go-to Superman story when people say, well, I don't really like Superman, or I don't really get Superman. What's the big deal about Superman? Mm-hmm. And my answer is read Kingdom Come, because that's what's good about Superman. It is a deconstruction, which I think is the best Superman stories. Not what can he do and how does he do it, but why does he do the things that he does? And this book is all about that. Do we need Superman? Would the world be better with a Superman in it? Would it be worse with a Superman in it? And the movie Superman versus Batman and Man of Steel kind of get into that, but they don't do nearly as good a job as this comic book does. It's called Kingdom Come. It's about 200 and some pages, so it's not a huge investment of time if you want to read it on your own. We have it here at the library. It's also on Hoopla Digital if you're interested. But I absolutely recommend it because the story is fascinating. It's a Justice League story, so it's about Superman, but Batman's there, Wonder Woman's there, Flash and the Green Lantern, they're all there. Mm-hmm. And it is what they call an Elseworlds novel, which means it doesn't happen necessarily in regular continuity, if you really care about that sort of thing. It's a little bit off to the side, and we'll find out more about that when we hear about Tony's Injustice in just a little bit. But Kingdom Come, it's beautiful, for starters. And it's well written. You really feel for Superman as the story goes on. From the very beginning, when you can see he's frustrated, all the way through to the decisions that he makes, I think it's a fantastic story. One of the things I think that this book really demonstrates is Superman is a lot more relatable than people give him credit for. People say, well, the relatable is Batman. Batman's a real person. He doesn't have superpowers. Mm-hmm. Batman's kind of a weirdo to me. He only goes out at night. He hurts people. He tries to scare people. I don't really understand that. That's not something that I aspire to. Mm-hmm. But Superman, he's always there to help. He does the best that he can do with what he has. That I get. Mm-hmm. That I relate to. And this book really brings that out. It's not about fire beams from your eyes, and it's not about being able to spin the world around the other way or anything silly like that. It's about just, I'm doing the best I can with what I have, and hopefully that's enough to be the right thing to do.
So it humanizes him in a way that maybe people wouldn't see otherwise if they're just looking at it from another perspective.
Yeah, I think so. He struggles emotionally a lot in this book. He struggles physically a little bit, but there's also just simple things, like he doesn't have all the facts. He's trying to make decisions, but he's doing it with only the information that he has. People are hiding things from him. Lex Luthor is plotting against him, and he's the best at creating an environment where no one knows all the working parts but himself. You know, so Superman doesn't quite know what's going on. Batman doesn't quite know what's going on. But Lex Luthor is trying to pull the strings in his favor. And so Superman kind of at times feels a weakness there. He's doing what he can do, but he doesn't know what the plan is. He doesn't know what the end game is.
Sure.
So he can't just go to the core of this thing and, you know, strangle Lex Luthor. That's not what Superman does. But he's trying to do the best that he can.
Would you say that that's part of one of the things that deconstructs the idea of Superman, and that he's powerful physically and then, you know, almost omniscient, and that he can see and hear things, but there are things that he can't see and hear? There's these secrets from him. Are there other ways that the hero is deconstructed or his abilities are made less powerful throughout the story?
I think it's more like this book is an examination of his weaknesses more than it's praising his strengths. It kind of takes for granted that you know his strengths. You know he can fly, you know he can punch, you know he can do all of these things. So let's talk about what he can't do. He can't know everything. He can't make the right decision all the time. He can't be everywhere that he needs to be. He can't foresee the future. And all of those things are things that we share with Superman. So it creates a compelling question in your mind that, well, if you were Superman, what would you do in this situation? And that's something I like to explore. That's something I like to think about. If Batman were in that situation, I don't know what I'd do. I'd hide in a cave? I don't know. Batman is a mystery to me, but Superman is someone I can relate to. In Kingdom Come, there's another one called All-Star Superman I'll also recommend, but Kingdom Come is definitely the one where if you want to see Superman at his worst, one might say in some ways, at his most vulnerable, at his most insecure, Kingdom Come does a really good job of portraying him as vulnerable and portraying him as incomplete, as not being able to do the right thing at all times for all people. So that's Kingdom Come. Like I say, it's on the shelf at the library, or you can check it out on Hoopla Digital. I've enjoyed it many times. I was happy to read it again for this podcast. And it is a what we consider a graphic novel, which is a collection of smaller issues of comic books. And then we're going to move on to the next graphic novel, and that's Tony's. And Tony's been reading Injustice. So Tony, tell us about that.
Yeah, so Injustice is also a Justice League story. So it uses the same cast of characters. It's quite long at this point in that it's probably more than a graphic novel. It's several years. I think it's starting year 5 now in 2016, even though it just began in 2013. I think the concept behind it was the prequel or the setting up of a story for a video game of the same name, Injustice, Gods of War. Or sorry, Gods Among Us, sorry. Gods of War being another video game.
Another video game.
But the main plot of the story is quite excellent in that it really paints these giant conflicts, these world-scale conflicts, almost Avengers style. You have Superman kind of in a good point in his life where, you know, him and Lois Lane are having a child, and then the Joker hatches a seriously dark and twisted plot to destroy, you know, the city of Metropolis. And he doesn't care about himself. He's going to do something so vile, so evil, that Superman, you know, is going to retaliate to the Joker. And it really just brings out what probably wouldn't happen in Kingdom Come, but this is, again, probably an alternate universe, but it brings out a really, really dark side in Superman, and that something that he loves so dear is taken from him, and he's just over the edge and has to savagely kill the Joker. And that's just the start of moving things forward. And obviously that creates a, maybe it's not obvious to people that are new to the series, but it does create a fissure in the Justice League, and Batman plus a bunch of other of the superheroes take one side, and Superman starts getting this very powerful, like righteous feeling that he can stop crime throughout the world and he can end all this conflict. And you know, since he's lost something so dear to him, he just wants to make the world a better place at any cost. And of course, he isn't completely evil. He still has a lot of, you know, values, but he's willing to go a step further and just eliminate the bad people and like call them out and topple legitimate governments in order to stop, you know, fighting across the world, you know. So it's really an interesting cast of characters. And I would say it almost reads like how you would perceive the narrative of a television show, with a lot of different characters and a lot of plots going on simultaneously that all feed into a centralized story arc. So you have characters like Wonder Woman and Green Arrow and Harley Quinn, kind of all with the motivations. Wonder Woman and Superman is a relationship that's been teased and becomes a thing in some of the alternate universes. And it definitely is a thing here. And Harley Quinn, after losing Joker, kind of has her own story arc and her own identity. And I think it's great that they explore them to a lot of logical conclusions, but they don't spend too much time on one character. So it's interesting enough to be personal, but it doesn't spend too much time where you have to know the backstory of any character too deeply. So I think it's a great introduction to the DC world. Even if it is an alternate universe, I think I feel much more well acquainted with the world now. So I would highly recommend it. just the first year, and I've read half of the second year, which is the first year is a 2-volume graphic novel set, probably totals about 200 pages. And it's, even though it does continue the action and there's a bit of a cliffhanger, I would say it's worth getting into to see if you like it, because it's telling these awesome stories that you feel like you're happy that you've read them and you're happy you know these characters all the better, and doesn't really leave anything wanting at the end. You just want to keep going. So I was just upset that it ended and there was more to read. I'm like, oh, okay. So I guess I'm going to have to get the next year now. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty invested in reading through them all at this point, just because it's, I don't know, I've never been that much of a comic book person, and it's, I think it's just a great introduction. So,
yeah, Injustice does one thing very well that Kingdom Come, for example, doesn't do, whereas Injustice introduces a lot of the deep bench that DC has in a way that you can get to learn about these characters and know about these characters, where Kingdom Come just throws them out there. You remember Spectre, right? No one does. But it's a big deal. Mm-hmm. To have Captain Marvel in Kingdom Come is a major plot point. And Captain Marvel, most people couldn't name or describe mm-hmm. who he is or what he does or why he might be important. Whereas Injustice is very good about, it's the core characters that you know, and then they slowly expand. And as they slowly expand, they're really well-defined.
I wish Suicide Squad had taken a page from that.
Sure, or Batman v Superman, because this is a perfect Batman versus Superman storyline.
Yes.
It's really tight, and there's a lot at stake, you know? Mm-hmm. And it shows where they would be at conflict, where Batman has a sense of a higher justice governing people, and Superman feels as if he can dictate certain things, so I recommend it. That's Injustice. It's by Tom Taylor. Injustice, Gods Among Us.
All right. Thank you, Tony. And then we'll move on to Jamie for our next DC graphic novel.
Okay. So I'm talking about Batman the Killing Joke. And I apologize if I make any mistakes. So Dave, feel free to correct me.
All right.
I am very much a comics layperson, especially with DC. But I really enjoyed this one, maybe specifically for the reason that we were just talking about, which is that there weren't a lot of characters that I wasn't well acquainted with, you know, just mm-hmm, having sure. seen the Christopher Nolan movies, I knew every character mm-hmm. in this book. And it is only 44 pages, so it's relatively wow. short. And I think it was produced as a one-off written by Alan Moore, and then the art was by Brian Boland, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, in 1988. And the interesting thing about it is that it tells two stories back and forth, and the one that happens in the present time is that the Joker, of course, escapes from Arkham Asylum, as he's always wont to do, and essentially goes out for revenge on Commissioner Gordon. But meanwhile, while this story is going on, there's also flashbacks, which really give the genesis of the Joker and how he became the Joker, which is something that I think a lot of people, or at least I probably always thought about, is the Joker is this character that I've always been the most interested in because of his illogic, or that sense of creepiness I would always get. Mm-hmm. And how does someone become that way? And here we see that. And it slowly told to us that he was just a regular Joe. He was an engineer who decided to give that life up to try to become a comedian. And that failed. And he has a pregnant wife who's saying, how are we going to feed our child? So through a series of twists and turns, he decides to get into crime and help these criminals out by showing them around the place where he used to be an engineer. But then his wife dies through a freak accident, and he wants to back out of this crime, but they won't let him. Eventually, he falls into a vat of chemicals at this place. So it's the idea of, like, this one bad day happened. His wife died, and then he is in this crime he doesn't want to commit. He falls into this chemical solution and becomes the Joker. Meanwhile, in the present day, the Joker is going after Commissioner Gordon, and he breaks into his home, shoots his daughter, who eventually is Batgirl, which I didn't know, and then Oracle. And see, that's one of the things I liked about it is, obviously, if you know all these things, it adds depth to these characters. Mm-hmm. I had no idea that she was Batgirl or what the Oracle was, but mm-hmm. I still could, you know, get a surface level, at least, enjoyment out of the tale. Mm-hmm. And he kidnaps Commissioner Gordon and takes him to this creepy carnival of doom and has him go through this creepy carnival ride that essentially is trying to make Commissioner Gordon go insane mm-hmm. to show him that Commissioner Gordon is only a few steps away from becoming like him, from mm-hmm. the Joker. Meanwhile, Batman is going after him. But the thing that I really liked about it was the idea of how Batman and the Joker aren't really that different from each other. Mm-hmm. And I think the Joker kind of says that, and Batman admits that too, because he says at the very beginning, one of us is going to kill the other one. Why does it have to be like this? But kind of acknowledges that they're both two sides of the same coin in some way, that they both had one bad day. And that's what turned them both into what they are.
Sure.
And at the end of it, Batman saves Commissioner Gordon, saves a daughter, but we're left with the idea of this image of Batman and the Joker together, just kind of maniacally laughing together. And then some people think that, this is a spoiler alert, some people think that Batman kills the Joker. Some people don't know if that actually happened, that they're just laughing because they see their similarities. But I like that the end was ambiguous, and I like that the whole thing is kind of morally ambiguous, or seeing that Batman, like you were saying, Dave, you know, he does bad things. Mm-hmm. He has a dark side to him too. And I think that it was interesting to see how that played out, that, you know, he and the Joker aren't that different in certain ways. So I enjoyed it. But it's funny because in the afterword and looking online, it seems like Alan Moore and Brian Bolland kind of both disliked it after it came out. Or they both thought that it wasn't a story that necessarily was their best work or that needed to be told. Or they thought, why does Joker need a backstory? So afterwards, they kind of not disavowed it necessarily, but weren't that into it. And I also felt the same way in terms of that. I think the Joker is creepier when I didn't know where he came from.
Sure.
Again, this is only probably one of, you know, a realm of possibilities. Mm-hmm. So I felt like that made him less insane and less frightening to me. But yeah, we can probably talk about more about the Joker when we talk about Suicide Squad.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, this book has come to be on every list. What Batman graphic novel should I read? The Killing Joke is always mm-hmm. number one. I think that's kind of what shocks Alan Moore a little bit. And he's like, mm-hmm. I just had this funny idea and wrote this little book, and now people are taking it as, you know, the cast in iron story of the Joker. And
I don't think
he ever intended that to happen. I think he just intended to communicate this idea of one bad day can turn a hero mm-hmm. into a villain, and not so much try to turn the entire Batman Joker mythos on its side mm-hmm. and pivot it in a new direction. Mm-hmm. So I think when you read comics, you have to be okay with canon is loose, which defies the meaning of the word. Mm-hmm. But so maybe it's the wrong word to use. There's Matt Fraction once asked, when he's writing Hawkeye, they said, how important is canon to you? He says, canon is trivia. Canon is not what you write your story about. Canon yeah. is fun things you can say when you're trying to remember old stories. So a book like this, I think you need to just take it on its own terms and not expect the world, not expect a grand story. It, like you said, it's short and it's simple mm-hmm. and it speaks to one point mm-hmm. with two stories. And I think it's beautiful in that regard. But in terms of this is the one book that defines Batman and the Joker for all times, mm-hmm. that's a little absurd. And I think that's why Alan Moore kind of backs away from it. He also just hates all publicity, I think. So anything that makes his name more popular, I think he dislikes just out of hand. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Jamie. That is The Killing Joke by Alan Moore and Brian Bolland. We'll now move on to our group discussion about Suicide Squad, the movie of the summer. Some were expecting. There's been trailers for this. There's been commercials for this. Mm-hmm. How do we feel about Suicide Squad?
I would give it a big fat meh.
Yeah.
And we actually played the trailer at one of our Pite and Click meetings, and I was really excited mm-hmm. about it then. I hadn't read anything about it beforehand, but watching the trailer, I was like, this looks amazing. It looked creepy and crazy and mm-hmm. kind of like an antidote to the other big blockbuster superhero movies. And then I watched it, and I was like, I wish I had gotten those 2 hours of my life back. Mm-hmm. It just was so plotting to me, because I guess it needs to be said who these characters are and sure. how they mm-hmm. came to be together, but it was told so plottingly, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I did not like it very much either. There were some good effects. There were some good performances, but like as a movie, as an experience to enjoy, I did not enjoy mm-hmm. sitting and watching this yeah. movie for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Right. And to follow up on what Jamie was saying, it was, in one way, it was very predictable in that it was plotting to put all these pieces mm-hmm. lined up so that they could do the everybody walking towards the screen.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Reservoir Dogs. Yeah. What we didn't want to see from that movie, I think, was just another group of heroes, whether they're supervillains or superheroes, acting together to solve one big problem. I think what I wanted was something a little more unique mm-hmm. that had more than just a big boss at the end,
yeah.
like Batman v Superman had. Yeah, and stylistically, there were some cool things. I'm almost grasping for like to try to redeem the movie, but that shouldn't be my job, just yeah. try to redeem the movie. It was dark aesthetically, but it was not dark by tone, mm-mm. which was the big fault of the movie.
Yeah,
Batman Begins was darker than it, and this didn't even approach how dark it was, and these are villains. Like, why is this mm-hmm. not as dark as that? And,
sure.
You know, yeah.
So. Yeah, DC is in a very interesting place right now with their movies, and it's maybe in response to that. Man of Steel was pretty dark. Batman versus Superman was very dark. Mm-hmm. And so did they go the other way with Suicide Squad? Like, let's make the villains lighthearted? Mm-hmm. Or was it a product of Deadpool? Deadpool made a ton of money. So they said, well, let's put more jokes in our movie. I don't know. But this movie, I've read things about this movie. I read that it went through like a half dozen editors.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
I don't know anything about that for a fact, but it doesn't seem like a cohesive idea.
No. I felt like it kept trying to hit different notes. Like there were the Deadpool like comedy notes and then these kind of poignant notes like with Deadshot and his daughter. But at the end of the day, I didn't really care about any of the characters because they're all introduced so quickly and they each had a kind of hackneyed plot point to make us feel for them, even though they're these killers and stuff. And the larger plot, like you were saying, Tony, I was like, I don't really understand why the Enchantress is trying to make this machine to take over the world. I don't know what were the enemies called? The things that they were fighting.
They were like zombies. I don't know exactly what they're called.
These like blobby type of things. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they were mindless zombies that supposedly were reanimated dead humans in some way, but it didn't really mean anything. Like, sure, they were kind of threatening, but it didn't mean anything when one of them died because we weren't sure if she had killed them or if the bad guys were actually killing humans. I don't think so. So it was like...
Yeah, it's almost like they went for a gray area. Yeah, like, we can't have them killing civilians, so we better come up with zombies for them to kill. Because on the one hand, they don't want to kill helpless civilians. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, they got to kill somebody. They're villains, right?
Right. So and it's Deadshot. He uses guns.
Yeah, he has to shoot someone in the course of this film, otherwise it'll be absurd.
Yeah.
So they came up with this really weird middle ground that didn't serve either purpose, I feel.
Yeah.
It was just trying to straddle two things in a lot of different ways, and then it didn't work on either side and just ended up falling.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know if I would have felt differently if they had had kind of like what Marvel did when they each had their own individual movies and then had their larger movie together, that if we didn't have to have that first 20 minutes of them sitting at a table and kind of opening each file, if it would have been better, I don't know.
Sure. So. Well, yeah, and the individual plot of the machine, like you said, it's you didn't know why she was building it, and we hardly knew how we got there.
Mm-hmm.
Like it almost seemed like it was Deus Ex Machina, where like something happened in the subway tunnel and all of a sudden she's in the middle of the city creating this machine. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to be invested in the story where you don't really even know how you got to the part that they're solving.
So.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd be fascinated in some sort of postmortem on this. Like if someone behind the scenes can say, well, the script was this and then it changed to that. There was these director's notes and those. I don't know. Something like that would be fascinating in this case because it just seemed to go so many different directions. That I assume things like, you know, oh, the studio must have interfered. I don't know anything like that, but I feel like something must have happened to this movie. I read interesting points where the scene where Harley Quinn is getting into the helicopter trying to escape, I guess in the original script, it was Joker pushing her out of the helicopter and laughing as she falls. But that didn't test well with audiences. So they decided to show it backwards or something like that. So that it looks like he's saving her. Like that's, I can't imagine that being a good idea.
Just playing it the other way.
Either playing it backwards or cutting it in the right spot. I'm not sure. But when things like that, when your movie goes that bad, like I don't know what to say.
How did we feel about the Joker's purpose and characterization in this movie?
Purpose seemed to be to make more money. Let's put the Joker in it because people want to see the Joker. That's another rumor about this movie is Jared Leto says like they filmed a lot more scenes that didn't actually make the cut, which would be interesting. The characterization I was cool with because I thought it fit with the rest of the characters. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know when it came out where he's got the face tattoos on the cover of Entertainment Weekly or something like that, a lot of people were taken off by that. Mm-hmm. But that was kind of in a vacuum on the cover of a magazine. Like in the movie, I mm-hmm. thought it was fine.
Sure.
It wasn't a role for the ages, like you might say with Heath Ledger or Jack Nicholson or whatever. But I think it fit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like it was one of the few bright spots in the movie, actually, because he wasn't a main character. He was a supporting role to kind of describe and flesh out the character of Harley Quinn. And mm-hmm. just not that she really had any, there wasn't any consequence to the story necessarily, but at least it gave the audience a sense of how Harley Quinn came into being, because this is the first time a lot of people even seen anything
mm-hmm.
Or read anything by her. So I think it's kind of neat to see what's classically known as like a main role as a supporting character. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't too ticked off.
One of the articles I was reading called Jared Leto Ledger Light as a Joker in this movie, which I thought was funny. I don't know. The way that the plot moved also was kind of mystifying to me about sure. the way that the arc or how much time was spent. I guess you have to with all those characters. But then at the end, after the helicopter and then them saving... I don't remember anyone's names anymore, but the woman who was in charge of their project. What was her name?
Yeah.
After that, and then after going to side to save the Enchantress, it seemed like everything was like moving really quickly, and I had no idea what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, but Harley Quinn was definitely the most fascinating to me, like where she like popped, like was the most colorful visually and as a character.
Yeah. After watching Suicide Squad, I am much more excited for a Harley Quinn mm-hmm. standalone movie. Mm-hmm. I thought she was great. I thought the portrayal was great. Like, I worried that it would be too much like Deadpool, and it wasn't. It was still very much her. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very excited for that. I think that'll be a good movie in the way that I didn't like Superman Batman very mm-hmm. much, Superman versus Batman. But I think a standalone Batman movie with Ben Affleck as Bruce Wayne would also be very good. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. kind of funny that DC is making these big collaborations, these big, let's put everyone in the movie. And I'm thinking, no, man, like you've got one or two hits here. Mm-hmm. Just spin them off into their own movie. Do it that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is Deadshot going to have his own movie?
So it says on the internet.
Okay.
Or at least he's going to figure heavily into the sequel. The mm-hmm. movie made a lot more than its budget. So there may be a sequel to Suicide Squad. Because if you make enough money, they will make a sequel. And that did happen here.
If there's just going to be a lot of movies that the sequel is better than the original because the original made money. Because maybe. That's my theory on like Warcraft and maybe Batman v Superman is going to get the Justice League. And maybe if the Justice League is better than Batman v Superman and Suicide Squad 2 listens to its audience and actually sticks to, you know, a cohesive creative vision or something, mm-hmm. and it is great, I feel like there's going to be all these movies that are better than their original.
Like trial and error with these
yeah.
multi-million sure. yeah. Yeah, dollar movies. Yeah. Like, maybe you should have figured this out in testing before you started playing scenes backwards.
I will stick up for the comics. If you are a comics reader or thinking about reading the comics, Suicide Squad is great.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely recommend it. Mm-hmm. Harley Quinn is great. I absolutely recommend that. As for the Suicide Squad movie, no thanks. I'm sorry to say.
How did the Suicide Squad comics introduce the characters? Do they automatically assume that you will know these characters so they don't give that much backstory? Or how do they involve that?
A couple of things. They assume that you know some characters, mm-hmm. but then they go ahead and reintroduce them anyway. They don't mm-hmm. go through the laborious backstory mm-hmm. that this movie did. But another thing is the Suicide Squad in the comics is about half as big. This was a lot of people,
mm-hmm.
whereas it's only five or six at times in the comic books. Mm-hmm. So you didn't have to keep track of, what was it, 8, 9 people?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So like even just that was a strength to it. And then some people are more complicated than others. Sure, Deadshot's got a long, weird past, but King Shark is King Shark. You know, we know what King Shark likes to do. He was replaced by Killer Croc in the movie, but mm-hmm. King Shark in the books, he likes to fight people. That's what he does. He doesn't need much of a backstory.
Mm-hmm.
So Suicide Squad, no. Sounds like no.
Yeah. No.
No. Sorry to say. Sorry to say. Suicide Squad. Batman versus Superman was boring. I watched it the week before. I'd love to recommend that. Ben Affleck was great. I am super excited for a Ben Affleck Batman movie. I'm maybe excited for Justice League.
Or Wonder Woman's doing a movie too.
Wonder Woman is doing a movie too. Yeah. I didn't like her that much in this movie, but she honestly didn't have that much screen time.
Well, the consensus between me and my friends is that when she shows up, it's great, but then the movie ends. So it's like she's only really showing up as Wonder Woman for a short
blink. Yeah, just as like a teaser. Yeah.
Speaking of dark, she's in a World War I setting, so I'm not sure how that movie's going to come across, but
I think that'd be interesting as something different.
At the very least, it's going to be, it's not going to be gritty, urban, nighttime, dark all the time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, maybe that'll be interesting. Well, that about wraps it up for the Pint and Click podcast. Thank you, Tony. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jamie. Thank you. I'm Dave, and this has been the DC Comics experience of the Pint and Click podcast. Next time, we'll talk about some other stuff, but for today, it's all Superman and Batman, because why not? I love them, and you should, too. All right, thanks.